The Bible Study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary.
Second hour of the Bible Study, the Ask the Pastor Hour. Our telephone numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. It's your program. I always have my little Ask the Pastor folder here full of questions, but we really like to turn it over to you and let you deal with the issues of the day or the questions that are on your mind. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our guest is Pastor David Andrus. He's a big shot. He's an executive director. That's what we like to call him, the executive director of Lutheran Blind Mission, and a fairly regular guest here on our program. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning, Chuck. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
The business of Lutheran Blind Mission, we always like to check up with your activity, find out what's going on, what's on the front burner for Lutheran Blind Mission.
We opened another outreach center down in Tampa, Florida this past weekend, as well as having some of the other 57 outreach centers around the country.
How many?
57.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are you sort of like the buck stopper for all of those locations?
Well, yeah, more or less. We're the connection for them. We've started them all and give them training, as well as then as those outreach centers grow. And they can have anywhere between, especially when they start, they maybe only have five people coming. But then as they grow, like, for example, I was at Concordia Maplewood. I think we had 35. No, I was down to 30 this last time. And as they come, they also are looking and interested in other things when it comes to Christian devotionals materials. So then we inform them what we have here at Lutheran Blind Mission of materials, of the catechism, the hymnals for church use, but then also daily devotional, walk through the Bible, and as well as then our lending library. So the national office plays a very active role with all of these 57 outreach centers in helping provide materials for them on a daily basis.
Well, let's turn our attention here.
I have a question for you before you do.
Okay.
Before we start to ask the pastor, I'd like to start ask the host.
Let me check the Ask the Pastor rule book and see if that's allowed. No, I think here we have, it looks like in Section 8, Rule 14, Subset B. Well, that's not allowed, but go ahead. We'll make an exception today.
Do you know how long Ask the Pastor has been on the air and how long it's been?
I can't point to an inception, but I know it's well over 10 years.
Okay. I think it's a neat format and all, but as I was just waiting to come on the air and was hearing you mention about Ask the Pastor, I thought, I wonder how long it's been on the air.
Well, Ask the Pastor in its current format has mm-hmm. been on for, I would say, about 3, maybe 4 years.
Okay.
For many years, I did the Bible study for 1 hour from 10 to 11, and we set Fridays aside for Ask the Pastor.
Ah.
That's been, that goes way back. But
okay.
It's been about 4 years or so that we changed it to a 2-hour setting.
Okay.
And do Ask the Pastor every day.
Okay.
So in that setting, it's been about 4 years.
It's a neat way to...
We haven't worn you out, have we?
No, not me. Has it worn you out?
No. I love these conversations.
Okay.
But I know that they can be a little challenging for you guys because you never know what's coming.
Yeah, and you keep us moving really fast in our thinking process.
People,
we really have to shuffle our feet fast.
Yeah, people who listen to this hour need to know that it's very rare. I do this. I do make an exception once in a while, but it's very rare for me to tip the pastor off as to what we're going to talk about. This is pretty much the same thing as running a Bible class on Sunday morning and somebody sticks up a hand and they say, oh, by the way, Pastor, did you see about this pro-life measure voted down in Colorado? You don't have really a chance to prepare for that on Sunday morning, and I don't give the pastors much chance to prepare here.
You've never given me that.
Well, and, you know, the reason is because I really do scour the events of the day, mm-hmm. the things that are on the top of people's minds today, mm-hmm. and toss them out there. Mm. And on Ask the Pastor, we don't ask for a lot of clear, definitive, theological answers. We're trying to look at what people are wrestling with.
Yeah.
And what we found is that you guys are so well-equipped that you can render, in almost every case, a helpful observation. And that seems to resonate with people. So that's what we do.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so, now the show can go back to you.
All right. Thank you, sir. That wasn't too tough, although I did break out in sweat here a little bit there when you...
Got to keep you on your toes.
The people of Colorado had a pro-life opportunity yesterday. Personhood Amendment 62 would have in Colorado given human rights to the unborn. That pro-life measure was defeated by a nearly 3-to-1 margin. So if you're a pro-life person, I think that's quite discouraging. It's one thing to not carry the day. It's another thing to get spanked, which 3-to-1 margin, I think you got spanked. So from your perspective, is that somewhat discouraging, highly discouraging, not discouraging at all? How do you see it?
Two things come to mind. One, yes, it is discouraging in reference to the life movement to bring and not only bring the recognition of life and its sanctity all the way to conception, with all of the guidelines and blessings that citizenship of the United States allows, that is a concern. The other thing it sheds light on is where people's thinking people in general is at the present, is or are. People's thinking, I guess it is, as a collective. I'm struggling with that.
I'm just going to wait for you to figure it out, and then we'll go with that.
Where you are, how's that?
Yeah.
Because that says we may believe in life, but boy, to give substantial support to that in the legal field, they aren't ready to do that. And I think there is sometimes a line that people will say, yes, I believe in life, and yes, I'm willing to support life, and yes, if it were into my family, you bet I would defend life. But when it comes to the country and imposing laws and regulations along with their protection, people I've found are slow to do that. And the reason they're slow to do that is they value their independence and individuality. And because we're a country built on individuality and independence, we are very slow, and this is a flip side, and I think it's an okay thing, we're very slow, therefore, to impinge upon the rights and privileges and the independence and individuality of others. We don't have a good social collective anymore, is where it really comes down to.
We don't have a good social collective anymore. What do you mean by that?
We think as individuals, and therefore are always willing to give individuals a clear girth or allowance so they can be individuals. It's very hard for a country that boasts and brags and works at keeping individuality and independence for the individual to say, socially, we must do this as a collective. Do you remember when the seatbelt laws first went into action? People were, no, because you're infringing on my rights as an individual. And things like that, it brought out the fact that we have a hard time as a society, as a big social network and social collective, to say, yep, we agree on this and we'll abide by it. Because we want to protect our individuality. Because we're afraid if I impose upon you my individual beliefs, you may do the same to me the next day. So we're cautious about doing that.
So, the a spokeswoman for Planned Parenthood, Monica McCafferty, gave a comment to the Colorado Independent newspaper. The quote from Ms. McCafferty is, "Tonight's victory sends a strong message that Colorado is a pro-choice state." So what the Coloradans have said is that one day after you're born, or the moment you're born, I guess, you are a person. But one day or 2 days before you're born, you are not. It seems to me that you don't have to work very hard, you don't have to think very hard to come to the conclusion that that individual in the mother's womb is a person.
Right.
It seems to me that you really have to jump through a lot of difficult hoops to come to the conclusion that that 8 months and 30 days individual in the mother's womb is not a person.
Right.
You have to sort of renounce logic. But apparently, 3 out of 4 Coloradans are happy to do that. I find that interesting.
One could say you're renouncing or setting aside logic. I'm going to make a broad sweeping statement here, and maybe we'll get some flack. Or I'll get some flack for it, and if that's so be it. I think a lot of those who are pro-choice and who would say this is a statement that pro-choice and what a woman wants to do with her body is what is up to her. Most of those people do not have a strong sense of God or a belief in God at all. Rather, they have a strong sense of individuality and what I want to do with myself is okay. Don't push upon me your values, because I have different values, and the values is me first. And so really when I hear this vote, that's what I think of, is it's speaking a lot that we are shrinking back even more from an understanding of God. Because if you hold there is a God, and that he is the creator of all, and he sustains it, and it's that if you hold there's a God, you gotta consider him. What does he do in this world now? And it's pretty hard to say that he doesn't help sustain things like gravity, like the process that things will grow. He continues to do those. When it's not much logic to go to the next step of human life, that he has a role to play. If you hold to pro-choice and that a child is not a child till born, then you aren't giving God much room at all in your life and in your values. So this vote tells me most of Colorado doesn't have much thought of God.
The story I'm looking at here on ChristianPost.com says that this is the second time the pro-life measure was voted down after a failed attempt in 2008. Pro-life missionaries and volunteers were optimistic this time around as they mobilized churches and the pro-life faithful. Language was also altered to define person to include every human being from the beginning of the biological development of that human being, as opposed to the language any human being from the moment of fertilization. So it was like, we learned our lesson in 2008 on how to get this done, and now here in 2010 we're optimistic and nope, we lost 3-1.
Yeah. And but again, as I've been around for many years, I think for those who are pro-life, like myself and like yourself, it's an issue of life. But for those who are on the other side, and out of that 3-1, I bet half of them, it's not a matter of life at all, but a matter of individuality and independence. And usually the other side hangs their sign on the fact, if you have this right taken away, other choices that you may want will be taken away. So they're pushing that individuality and choice issue rather than dealing with the life issue.
Well, I think if I were a pro-life person in Colorado today, I'd be pretty discouraged. And, you know, for all I know, since you and I are on the live stream here on the Internet, there might be somebody listening to us in Colorado right now.
Sure.
What would you say to a person in Colorado or a pro-lifer anywhere, for that matter, around the world, after a setback like this?
Two things. One, by all means, take today, read the Book of Lamentations, weep and cry, just like the children who sat on the shores of Babylon and wept for Jerusalem as they were taken away and Jerusalem was sacked. There, it is a sad day. And I won't deny the reality of that. Take time to mourn and be sad. But then, after one day of that, don't give in to the fear, frustration, or defeat. But be people of faith. And see, now you have a wonderful opportunity, because as people turn their backs on God and life, it's going to give us more opportunities as Christians to speak about life when people are down. As our world moves away from that quote-unquote moral base, and I don't want to say a Christian nation, because whether we're a Christian nation or not, that, I don't want to get into that discussion, but we were a morally based society, no doubt about that. As we move away from that, the immorality of this world and its values that are away from God bring people into a confused state, because that will always end them in frustration and confusion. It's at that point that we as Christians have the opportunity to say, there is another reality. May I paint it for you? And that's the positive side of this postmodern world that we live in. Christianity is only one reality among many. Okay, so be it. Well, make sure you paint it good and right at the right moments, when people are struggling and hurting because they just realized their reality was just shattered.
Finally, one more question on this topic.
Mm-hmm.
For those people who call themselves Christians and believe in the truth shared with us in Romans 13, that the governing authorities are established by God, that the authority to govern comes from God, that the people of Colorado have an opportunity to speak to personhood 62 and apply personhood to the unborn, which we know is the will of God. Am I okay so far?
Yeah.
Then why didn't God affect his will in Colorado through his agency, the state government of Colorado?
And it's that last step, that we step off of the right, that road that we were traveling down, and fall into the ditch. Because the same question was asked about, what about Adolf Hitler as he's killing so many people, whether it be Jews, and many Christians were killed under his regime as well. If this is established by God, where is he? And that's why a lot of people lost their faith during World War II, is because they thought God was in control, and then, no, it's Hitler, this cruel man. Let's take Hitler, and then we'll move to Colorado. Just because God permits things to happen doesn't mean he's the one who in the board of chess who picked up that piece and moved it there. But he does say to us, when those are in authority, we need to follow them. And the other thing to remember is it's not that God is trying to establish his kingdom here on earth in the earthly realm. They are there to maintain peace, and well, I'll just use the word peace, and you can extrapolate that to stopping of wars and violence, to peace and prosperity. When there is peace, that usually means that there's prosperity. And all of that God does so that his greater will of saving people might occur. And we see that when somebody like an Adolf Hitler destroys the peace and makes the gospel sharing impossible, he will step in, he will pass judgment on that person, and he'll put a different person in charge. Okay, that's the general of Europe. Now, how does that apply to Colorado in this? I suppose, I'll take the same words, God's greater will be at work. Certainly this is not pleasing to him. But he has a greater thing in mind, for his kingdom isn't the kingdom of the left, but the kingdom of the right. The kingdom of the left is there to help maintain peace in our land, so that the kingdom of the right, that's the true church, the gospel-sharing part of the church, so people might be saved, may have an opportunity to speak. Certainly we as Christians have that opportunity now in the kingdom of the right to continue to speak and proclaim the gospel, even to those who are, quote-unquote, killing babies. The sad part is we won't have a chance to speak to those babies who might have been born.
Let's turn our attention to another story coming out of Newark, New Jersey today. Law enforcement officials, that would be kingdom of the left people, right?
Right, correct.
Law enforcement officials say a program that allows people who are wanted by the law to turn themselves in safely would not succeed without participation of churches. Mm. That would be kingdom of the right people, correct?
Maybe. Even within the church, there is the kingdom of the left, and that maintain the buildings, make sure it's heated, make sure there's good order.
All right. It says in New Jersey, the third, and it's called Fugitive Safe Surrender event, will take place this week at a church in Somerset, New Jersey. The program is aimed at nonviolent offenders. There are many people who are wanted for drug possession or traffic violations or unpaid child support. Across the country, more than 25,000 people have turned themselves in at churches as part of safe surrender programs. Supporters say the program gives offenders the opportunity to get their lives back on track. But advocates of church-state separation worry that it blurs lines between government and religious institutions. I wonder, that's all we have on this story, Pastor Andrus. I wonder why you think it is that law enforcement officials would affirm that a program like this, Fugitive Safe Surrender, will not work unless churches are involved.
If I understand your question right, I'm not sure I can answer it, because you're asking why would those who don't like church and want a strong separation of church and state, why do they think it won't work?
It sounds as if the people who run this program, who are law enforcement officials, if they were told by their state government in New Jersey, for example, we love your program. Wow, more than 25,000 people have turned themselves in all across the country, and some of them here in New Jersey. But you can't do it in churches anymore. You're going to have to go to the post office, or you're going to have to go to the motor vehicle division or something like that. No more churches. Well, the law enforcement officials who administer the program say it won't work unless we have church participation. If you take that component out of our program, then our program will fail. What is it, do you think, that the kingdom of the left people, the law enforcement officials, have learned or discovered that they need churches in their program in order for it to succeed?
Now I understand the question a little bit better. That is interesting.
I tell you what, Pastor. I'm going to give you 4 minutes to think about it.
Okay, thank you. You gave me some warning. This is good.
This is like grace. you take this question here and you ponder it for the next 4 minutes, and then we'll see what you come up with.
All right.
Pastor David Andrus is with us here today on our Bible study program, Ask the Pastor. And for that matter, I'm curious, for those of you who are listening to us, why do you think that the law enforcement officials feel it is important to administer their program in conjunction with Kingdom of the Right people, church people. It must have some reason. What do you think it is? 505-780-5180-730-2727. If you'd like to join us here on our Ask the Pastor Bible study. We'll be right back.
I'm Dale Meyer. If you're like I am, December will be upon us sooner than expected. We'll find ourselves swamped with things to do at the end of the year. Now is a good time to start planning for year-end charitable gifts. As you do, I hope you will remember Concordia Seminary. Call 314-505-7000 and ask for Janine. 314-505-7000 and ask for Janine.
Being a caregiver is serious business. You volunteer for it or it finds you. There's no caregiver award. Who could ever thank you enough? But when caregiving steals your joy, find encouragement and some how-tos to remember. You're doing an act of God Himself, tending to someone in need. Hi, I'm Phyllis Wallace. Caregiver support right here next time, Woman to Woman.
Saturday mornings at 9:30 on KFUO Radio.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
An Ohio man forced his pregnant girlfriend at gunpoint to drive to an abortion mill to abort their baby. In the process, he was caught and arrested. Prosecutors are now charging him with attempted murder of the unborn child. Ohio and dozens of other states have fetal homicide laws. These allow for the prosecution of anyone causing an unlawful termination of pregnancy. They're most often used when a pregnant woman is killed in a car accident or by deadly assault. Additional charges are filed if an unborn baby also dies. One law professor called the recent charges creative, but not far-fetched. Another legal expert said the facts were clearly against the assailant. This will be an interesting one to watch, with potential future trouble for Roe versus Wade. I'll keep you posted.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
The challenge ahead. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. The executive director of the D. James Kennedy Center for Christian Statesmanship hopes newly elected members of Congress recognize God has placed them there for a purpose.
God puts people in positions. He takes people out.
George Roller's ministry offers prayer, fellowship, and Bible studies to members of Congress and their staffs. He warns incoming lawmakers that
there are many temptations here in this city. There are many charming people. And members of Congress that are here are often without their spouses.
He also warns newcomers against
becoming prideful, to think that they've done it themselves rather than God putting them in this position.
He says freshman congressmen will need God's guidance.
I would encourage them to seek the Lord while he may be found, and after they have found him and accepted him, then to continue to feed on the Word of God and learn more of what God's will is for them in this position he's called them to.
I'm Steve Coleman.
The National Lutheran Choir returns to St. Louis this Christmas. This internationally renowned 60-voice choir from the Twin Cities will present a glorious new choral Christmas festival titled Emmanuel, God with Us, Saturday, December 18th in downtown St. Louis. More than just another Christmas concert, the choir will sing from all corners of Christ Church Cathedral, weaving poetry, scripture, and audience carols into a memorable program. There will be two matinees at 2 and 5 p.m. Tickets are available right now by calling toll-free 1-888-747-4589. A moving experience not to be missed. Emmanuel, God with Us, the National Lutheran Choir at Christ Church Cathedral, Saturday, December 18th. Call 1-888-747-4589 or visit nlca.com. Sponsored by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, Concordia Publishing House, and AM 850 KFUO.
You're listening to the Bible study. We're privileged to have with us the Executive Director of Lutheran Blind Mission, Pastor David Andrus, with us here. Our numbers are 505-7850 and 1-800-730-2727. Just as soon as you think that you found a way to push every vestige of religion or church out of the civil realm, Then along comes a program like Fugitive Safe Surrender. Law enforcement officials are faced with the difficulty of having to go out and locate and, I guess, arrest people who are pretty far down the ladder here in terms of criminal activity. People who have committed traffic violations, people who have been found in possession of drugs, or people who have not paid their child support. These are all bad things, but it's not murder. It's not rape. And so our limited law enforcement officials, we just don't have enough policemen and to go around, they focus on the very serious crimes, and some of these other violators pretty much go untouched. And they're stuck in limbo. They have committed misdemeanors, or they've broken the law, and they have that hanging over their head. So they have an opportunity to turn themselves in. And then that works for the law enforcement officials. They don't have to spend precious time looking for these people, arresting these people. And they can get the burden of their guilt behind them, working it out. It's a good thing. It just turns out that apparently on in the thinking of the law enforcement officials, that participation by churches helps make this program succeed. And you would think that if you could get this done at the post office, you'd go there. But no, they want to go to churches. And my question to you, Pastor Andrus, is why do you think that is?
I appreciate the 4 minutes, because that helped. I got a couple thoughts on why that would be. The church is seen as a neutral party. If people would go to the post office, that's still just another part of the federal government. And so you're turning yourself into the government for the government to prosecute you. And that moves into the second reason I think people would want churches, and that police officers believe that the church is important, is not only is it an entity outside that institution called government, because usually police officers are considered part of the government institution, but secondly, churches are seen as fair. We live in a world that isn't fair and just, but the church, for all its problems and foibles, is still seen as having people who are fair and just and want to do the right thing, which leads then to the third and final reason churches will work, and why the police officers want the church to remain and not just some other government institution, is in some sense there when you deal with people to be arrested and prosecuted, the people turning themselves in have to feel that they have somebody on their side that they can trust not to do them wrong. And so the church, again, somewhat has that reputation, although they've abused it. The church is still generally seen as a place that they can go to and trust to be handled rightly and not abused, misused, or wrongly done. So I think those are the reasons why is the church is a separate entity, a third party that's trusted and tries to be fair.
Do you think that the perception, I'm going to call it perception, because we're talking about a situation where the kingdom of the left is kind of looking in on the kingdom of the right, those church folks over there. And there may be a perception that whatever it is that those religious people are doing, and some of it, frankly, looks pretty weird to us, Kingdom of the Left people, but whatever they're doing, there is this component of forgiveness in there somewhere. You know, you can say that about those Christian people or those religion people. They have this tendency to forgiveness. And that component makes the church location, the church building, a little more warm and fuzzy looking than perhaps the stark, cold post office or DMV.
Absolutely.
Do you think that that plays in?
Absolutely. People also understand that the church is about relationships. and they want to deal with somebody who understands them in relationship, and that's where that forgiveness comes in. As soon as they go to the police, you're dealing with the law, not relationship. And so they want that component in there, and that's where that fairness and stuff enters in. And forgiveness, yeah, probably is a part of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, if that's true, then what about the danger of bait and switch, Pastor? Suppose I'm a delinquent dad, and I have not paid my child support payments for about 3 years now.
Mm-hmm.
They've piled up to such an amount that I don't even like to think about it. I don't know how I will ever make up that delinquency.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe if I turn myself in at a church, maybe that amount will be forgiven, and I won't have to pay it at all. Oh, no, I turned myself in, and I wasn't slapped in handcuffs or anything, but I am going to have to pay that money. You baited and switched on me. You think that could be a problem?
For some people, it will be, yeah. And that they will believe that the institution called the church let them down, yes. My guess is, though, that when this program is done, there is training involved with the church. And if I were doing it, and if a person walked in my office and just as you described and said, I've got $17,000, I can't pay for it, I'm a dad, I'll say, okay, if you're going to be part of this program and we go down to the police office, I can't guarantee they're going to forgive it. I would have been trained to be saying those things. But I will work on your behalf and stand there with you. And the police have promised, and I would want to know that too, so I can tell that person, A, B, C, D, that like I'm not going to be thrown into jail, we'll work with you or whatever. And if the person goes, I don't like that, I would hope the program has that option, then you thank you for coming in, you may leave, but do you realize you are subject to the law and you could be arrested, and if you are, then you'll be thrown into jail and the worst thing will happen. But I would hope then that I wouldn't be forced by the police to give those names of the people who walked away. And in fact, if I were told that by a police officer, if you're going to be involved, you got to turn people in if they walked away, I'd say no way. I wouldn't do it then. Because I would want to protect that relationship and the reason people walked in.
Here's another subject to talk about here, an article written by Stephanie Samuel. And the headline is, Pastors Contest Lifting Sunday Liquor Bans. Religious figures are urging government officials to continue long-standing bans on the Sunday sale of alcohol in stores and restaurants, while industry advocates say Bible Belt bans are, quote, archaic, unquote. In Oxford, Mississippi, Mayor George Patterson and the City Board of Aldermen are considering dropping the Sunday ban of alcohol. On Sundays, liquor stores in the University of Mississippi hometown shut down, and alcohol sales are restricted in restaurants. The Board of Aldermen had already rejected a previous attempt to repeal the Sunday ban. However, the city officials are considering the Mississippi Hospitality and Restaurant Association's proposal to allow restaurants to skirt the ban and sell bottles of wine on the Lord's Day. Pastor Eric Hankins of First Baptist Church objects to rescinding the ban, citing the Ole Miss and the town's reputations. It's a school party town, and that's created a culture of alcohol. Misuse and abuse of alcohol is a norm here, he argued. He believes that the town needs to shake off its party image. He also believes the community has the right to share that message that Sunday in a special day of rest and family and of spiritual significance. It's a good thing for a community to be able to say, even among irreligious people, it's good to be able to say spiritual things are important, said the pastor. Now, if you lived in Oxford, Mississippi, in the shadow of the University of Mississippi, Pastor Andrus, do you think that you would be involved in this question? Do you think you'd be advocating one point or another, or would you be sitting it out?
It was always my practice when I was a parish pastor, and still is as I serve as director of Lutheran Blind Mission. If I can avoid being involved with things on a level of public presentation like this, I would like to avoid it. Except for pro-life. There I will. Because of its value. I can tell you it's the Bible class, and pastors say, or somebody raises their hand and says, "So, Pastor, what do you think? Should there or should there not be?" I could speak then, but I wouldn't be publicly active as some pastors are. And my view would be, if I were asked, would be, why not keep the ban? There is good reason to have that in place. It does emphasize spiritual values. And it's the sale of alcohol. I mean, the true alcoholic is going to go on Saturday and buy two bottles, one for Saturday and one for Sunday. So it's not going to stop him from drinking. But it does set up a social, and again, that's the social mindset, that we want to set this day aside for sober thinking. And that's where that word comes in, sober thinking, sober judgment. So to stay away from it in the restaurants, not a bad thing. Because, sure, it's an inconvenience, but it's kind of like fasting during Lent. Inconveniences aren't a bad thing for us because it will turn us to think about, and then we can use that fact that no alcohol is being sold to think about God and his blessings to this community as well as to us as individuals.
Well, these are the so-called blue laws is what we're talking about here. And so apparently they have a blue law down in Oxford, Mississippi, which restricts people's freedom, if you will, on Sunday. If you want to buy a six-pack of beer on the way home from church, well, you can't do that in Oxford, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. Now, we could look at that from one of two different perspectives. If this is the will of the people of Oxford, Mississippi, and they want to pass a law that says this is what we're going to do, then I guess we would all agree that they have a right to do that.
Right.
Does God care, do you think, Pastor? You know, if the church council said, I'm church council, if the city council, if the mayor, if they decide to repeal this blue law and allow for the sale and purchase of alcohol on Sunday in Oxford, Mississippi, does God go, "Oh, no, another blue law lost. This is a bad day."
No, I don't think God cares. Not on that level with that question.
That's going to come as a surprise to some people.
Yeah, no, God wouldn't care. That's kingdom of left. That's civil or peace and justice and civil order. Where he does care is, what are we going to do with that day? Are we setting aside time for him? Or are we only setting a time aside for our own pleasures? So that, and so, I'll twist it for you. What would make God sad is a very active Christian attends church, even votes for the blue laws, but then goes home and gets drunk or something else with the abuse of alcohol. That would make God sad. But as far as a blue law for the city, no, I don't think so. What we do with it as individuals or social collective, that might.
In Paul's first letter to the Corinthians, right after he responds to the question about eating food that has been offered to idols, he pretty much spends all of what we call chapter 8 responding to that. Then in the beginning of chapter 9, he says, "Am I not free? Am I not an apostle? Have I not seen Jesus our Lord? Are not you my workmanship in the Lord? If to others I am not an apostle, at least I am to you, for you are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord. This is my defense to those who would examine me. Do we not have the right to eat and drink?" So it sounds to me like the Apostle Paul, who has declared his freedom in Christ, would be in favor of repealing the blue law in Oxford, Mississippi, because after all, do we not have the right to eat and drink? And I know that when he says drink here, he doesn't mean drink to debauchery, into a stupor. But, you know, even Paul said to, I think it was Timothy, you know, take a little wine there for your stomach. Mm-hmm. And if it happens to be on Sunday, go ahead and take some wine because we're free. Would Paul be against the blue law in Oxford, Mississippi, Pastor?
Well, you stop short because I think it's in that same chapter he says, I've become all things to all people so that some might be saved. And so Paul, in his life, took a Nazarene vow, shaved his head, and did that even as others were doing. So I don't know what Paul would have done because it is... His ultimate goal was that people might be saved. And if repealing blue laws would save somebody, he'd probably do it. Although if it would lead to people's souls not being saved or lost, then he would vote against it. And that's, so blue laws are a tough thing. It's a tough thing to... In and of themselves, they don't seem either way. Actually, the blue law is neutral. It's what we do with it as individuals and then as a social collective. Personally, I think the blue laws, let me back up. The repeal of the blue laws in St. Louis, I went to the seminary when the blue laws were in place here and remember walking through the grocery stores and the alcohol area was roped off. I think the repeal of the blue laws has added to our social, the erosion of our social collective of values and morals. It's that slippery slope. Is it wrong to sell or buy alcohol or wrong to drink alcohol on Sunday? No. But add that with many other things, and all of a sudden you're sliding down the slope and find yourself in a muck at the bottom, and then that is a problem, and it is wrong. So in and of themselves, no. But where it may lead, yeah.
You know, I've always found 1 Corinthians to be a very difficult book.
Mm.
Part of the reason for the difficulty is that Paul seems to spend a good measure of time responding to questions sent to him or communicated to him by the Corinthians,
right.
And you have to sort of assume what those questions are.
Yeah.
I wonder what Paul would have written in a letter if somebody had asked him this question. I'm shifting gears now, going to a story from Montpelier, Vermont. Hmm. Maybe you can be the Apostle Paul for me today,
oh, gosh.
Pastor. Here's the story. The Supreme Court of the state of Vermont has affirmed a lower court ruling. That ruling was to award custody of an 8-year-old girl to her non-biological mother in a lesbian custody case. The court rejected an appeal by attorneys for biological mother, Lisa Miller, who was joined to Janet Jenkins in a civil union in Vermont back in the year 2000. After they broke up, Miller renounced homosexuality and became a Christian. Their daughter, her biological daughter, Isabella, has been the subject of a long-running legal fight. The custody ruling may be unenforceable. Miller and her daughter failed to appear for a court-ordered custody swap in January, and their whereabouts are now unknown. There are so many levels of controversy in this, Pastor, that
wow.
I think if the Apostle Paul had gotten this question from the Corinthians, he might have said, now, about that custody thing, I have no clue. So you have a woman who bears a child. She is the biological mother.
Mm-hmm.
She is apparently involved in what the kingdom of the left would call a civil union. Mm-hmm. That is a legal union recognized by the state of Vermont. She renounces her homosexuality. I think most Christians, Bible-believing Christians, would think that's a good thing. And then she becomes a Christian. And, of course, we all wonder exactly what does that mean. The story doesn't tell us. Now the biological Christian mother wants custody of her biological daughter. but because of the civil union, the Supreme Court of Vermont says, no, you can't have her. We're going to award her to the non-biological lesbian parent. And now the Christian mother is on the run and apparently in hiding. She might be looking for one of those safe church, you know, come out. What a mess, Pastor.
Oh, my.
Now,
so if I understand right, the court gave custody of this child to the two women there were in this relationship, the one that did not become a Christian.
Correct. The one who is a lesbian, the one who is not the biological mother of the child, the court awarded the child to her. And that ruling is in effect, and I guess you could say that if the woman, the Christian woman, is truly a godly woman, then what? She should obey the law of the state of Vermont, and turn the child over to the lesbian non-biological mother. Is that her Christian duty?
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
Isn't being the executive director of Lutheran Blind Mission so much easier?
Yeah, I think so. Well, you know, this is going to come up more and more, and I raised this to a fellow pastor, that pastors are being faced, because we have, even among those who are blind and visually impaired, faced not quite this setting, but other settings of people who get themselves into some pretty big messes, and that of our parishioners or people who want to attend our church and yet are in a mess, what are you going to do? And it's getting harder and harder. Oh, my goodness.
You know, if you were her pastor and she came to you, you would have to consider the options of either helping to conceal her from law enforcement or encouraging her to call the police and turn herself in.
Yeah. And at that point, that's an individual situation where there are times that I would take that stand and say, I will conceal a person because of the reasons they are choosing to disobey the law is strong Christian value reasons, and I would stand behind that and be willing to go to jail for that. There are other times, though, I would have to say, if you continue in what you're doing, you need to turn yourself in, or I will be forced in 15 days to turn you in. I always give them that option, 10, 15 days or whatever, so that forces them to make a choice in the matter. Now, I don't know all the situation here, so I don't know where I would stand on that one, but just even in general terms, that's a mess.
Well, the one thing, and we got about a minute left here, the one thing I take from your answer is that at the end of the day, you, David Andrus, have to sit down, consider all the facts that you have, and then make some kind of judgment call. You can't go to 1 Corinthians where the Corinthians asked Paul, well, what should we do if we have a civil union couple and the court awards the child to the non-biological mother? We don't have Paul's response to that.
That is correct.
So we're just left with your judgment, Pastor. That's quite a burden.
It is.
And you know what? You could get it wrong. Does that bother you, or does that worry you, that you are left with massive decisions like this with no real specific biblical reference, and you got to make a call on it?
It did bother me in the early part of my ministry. I've learned at those points where it's that vague and those that gray, I do a simple prayer. God, I am so confused on what to do, so I'm going to struggle with this, and I usually tell the Lord one day, and then at that point I'm going to make a decision, and I'm going to trust this day you're guiding me to make that right decision, and then I'm going to leap and take a leap of faith and trust you're with me.
I think that's a good plan. I think that was probably Paul's plan.
Yeah.
Thank you, Pastor.
Thank you.
We're out of time. Good to talk to you. We look forward to another conversation down the road.
Indeed. Thank you.
Pastor Curtis Dieterding will be with us tomorrow in Matthew 27.
Listen to Chuck Rathard and guest pastors Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.